Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Wednesday, February 9th. I am Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show is live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. We re-air from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KJLL AM 1330. And of course, we're always available. It's 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. We have an outstanding lineup of guests on today's show. We'll lead off with Dr. Victoria Mazes. She is the Buckmaster Show contributor on health. Then we're going to talk with legendary folklorist Big Jim Griffith. Then a newsmaker interview with housing analyst John Strobeck. Mr. Strobeck will update us on the local home building scene, and the news there is not so good. And arts and culture contributor Mark Sublett will be along. Mark and I will be talking with renowned Western artist Bill Schneck. That will be coming up in the next hour. And we begin this morning with Buckmaster Show contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes. She is the executive director of the University of Arizona-based Center for Integrative Medicine. She's also a professor of medicine, family and community medicine, and public health at the University of Arizona. Dr. Mazes is an internationally recognized leader in integrative medicine. She lectures worldwide to academic and community audiences. That means she's on the plane a lot on integrative medical issues, women's health, healthy aging, nutrition, and cancer. She is also the co-author of Integrative Women's Health. Dr. Mazes, always good to see you.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here.
You know, we're about, well, yesterday was the one-month anniversary of the terrible Tucson shooting tragedy. A lot of people are still dealing with some issues that they're just not... they don't feel right. They're feeling this grief. What advice do you have for these people? And are there some outreach areas for these individuals?
Well, first I'd say it is normal to still be experiencing grief, perhaps some anxiety, perhaps some loss of sleep when a tragedy like this occurs. We're delighted at the Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine to be offering some guided imagery healing for people who might have an interest. On our website, which is integrativemedicine.arizona.edu, we have received a gift from Belle Ruth Napperstack, who's the founder and director of healingjourneys.com, and she has provided streaming audio guided imagery for sleeplessness, for help with anxiety, for help with grief, for help with stress. And so this is a resource that we would like to make available, and she has made available to the Tucson community.
Give us the website again if someone would like to log on and check that out.
It's integrativemedicine, all one word, .arizona, all spelled out, .edu.
And for those that don't know about the Center for Integrative Medicine, it is based at the University of Arizona, as I mentioned, and it was started by the very famous Dr. Andrew Weil in the late 1990s. How is the center doing? It's evolved very quickly, hasn't it?
The center is doing wonderfully. And yes, we have grown now to train 130 physicians in our fellowship program each year. That's a 1,000-hour training program, the largest training program in the world in integrative medicine. We also are very proud of a new initiative that we've been doing since 2008, where we're training residents in integrative medicine. It's a 200-hour program, collaborative. It's now being offered at 14 different residencies around the United States, including, of course, the one at the University of Arizona.
We had Dr. Gordon Avey, as you know, the head of the Sarver Heart Center, on our program last week, and he was talking about this really terrible shortage that's developed of physicians who want to go into family medicine. I think, if I recall, he was talking about the last graduating class, and it was literally a handful or two of young docs who want to go into family medicine. It's a big problem.
It is a problem, and we're certainly facing a shortage of primary care physicians across the country. One of the things that's exciting about our new initiative in integrative medicine is that we find it enhances recruitment into primary care, and that these residencies that have the integrative medicine curriculum are getting top medical students who want to come because of the existence of this enhanced curriculum in integrative medicine.
And these are doctors who will go, they've heard of integrative medicine, perhaps maybe they'd heard of Dr. Weil, and they became interested in it, and they wanted to actually get into it for a career.
Yes, and actually some of them go and interview from one site to another that has this particular integrative medicine in residency initiative and choose one of the sites very much because of the curriculum.
Let's talk a little bit about one of your favorite areas. This is one of your areas of expertise in women's health. This is the 50th anniversary this year of the pill. Address for us the unspoken consequence of really the wonderful freedoms that the pill has provided for women.
Well, there's no question that the pill has provided this freedom. Obviously, worry about unwanted pregnancy. There's been a freedom of sexuality that's associated with it, an ability to choose the ideal timing, perhaps, of childbearing. And I think that those are wonderful things that the pill brought. It's a very safe form of birth control. What probably has been less talked about is that in delaying childbearing, which is happening across our country, there is an increased risk of infertility. Infertility affects one in six couples when they're in their 20s and early 30s, but by the late 30s, it affects one in three couples. And it's an incredibly stressful and incredibly painful experience for men and women, but I'd say especially for women. And in some ways, I think it's hidden, because what we get often in the news is Elizabeth Edwards having a baby at age 50 or Gina Davis having twins at 47.
And those are kind of anomalies, right? I mean, to have children that late.
Absolutely. But the implication when you hear about the celebrities is, I could wait until I'm 40. I could wait until I'm 45 and have a child then. And the reality is that the likelihood of infertility goes up dramatically as women age. And actually, men have consequences with delayed childbearing as well. And the likelihood then of being able to have a biological child goes down. The likelihood of having to have infertility treatment and do in vitro fertilization or use a donor egg goes up dramatically with age. And so this is perhaps not well enough discussed, that there is a consequence to delaying childbearing to the pill.
And of course, economic reasons have to be a huge factor in why couples delay having a child. You know, if you've got both people working in this economy, quite honestly, they need the money.
Well, I think people often do feel like they should wait to have a child until they're well established and they have financial security. And certainly there are arguments in favor of that. The reality is, though, that biologically in women, fertility peaks between 27 and 28. And so probably the ideal time biologically, we're not talking about socially, we're not talking about financially, but that would be in the late 20s. And once people get much beyond that age, the likelihood of them having a bit more difficulty or a lot more difficulty goes up substantially.
And how about, so you were saying one in three in the 30s?
In the late 30s.
Mm-hmm. But then you really start to get into other problems, don't you, if you were like to go over 40?
Right, absolutely. And so, you know, one of the things that I think also is not well known is that from an integrative medicine perspective, there are things that women and men can do to enhance their fertility and also to up the chances of having a healthy baby, which is, of course, what we all want most.
I guess diet is a big deal, right?
Yes, diet is a major factor.
When is diet not a big deal? You and I have been talking for years on TV and now radio, and we always seem to get back to food, don't we,
yes,
Victoria?
Yes, we're always talking about food.
You always are, regardless of the hour.
We have to go out to eat one day.
Whether we're here in the morning or whether we're at noon or in the evening, we're always talking about food. So a healthy diet, what kind of a diet are we talking about for couples that really want to enhance their fertility? Are there certain things that they should be eating?
Yes, there are, and also things that they should not be eating. So, for example, more vegetable protein and less animal protein. Some people try to avoid fish entirely, and yet fish is a wonderful source of omega-3 fatty acids and very important to the developing brain of a baby, of a fetus. So avoiding fish completely is actually a bad idea, but being really discerning about which fish are the healthiest in terms of lots of omega-3, but minimal mercury, minimal PCBs. We know that those are dangerous to the developing neurological system, to the brain. We also know that rich in antioxidants. There's some differences, though, from other times of life. For example, whole milk appears to be a healthier choice than low-fat or skim milk. That's a bit surprising.
It is, whole milk. You don't hear much about people drinking whole milk anymore.
That's true. And yet when milk is turned into skim milk, so to speak, what happens is it's spun at very high speeds and the fat separates from the more liquid components. Now, the fat tends to hold more of the female hormones and the water-based holds more of the male hormones. So when you drink a skim milk or a low-fat milk, you're getting more of the male hormones. That may actually reduce your chances of fertility. So this is a time when you actually do want whole milk. Yeah.
Healthy diet makes a difference. I would assume stress could be a factor. If you're all stressed out, perhaps that might affect the fertility situation.
It does. And it turns out that the hormonal system of the body is very sensitive. So the brain, the pituitary gland in the brain sends signals eventually to the ovary. And when people are high stress, and infertility is a high stress situation, that in and of itself can interfere with normal function of the ovaries in terms of producing a follicle, producing a healthy egg, and being able to become pregnant.
You're working on a book, a new book about fertility. I mean, this is an issue that is huge in this country. So just looking at those numbers, you've got, when you say one in six in their 20s cannot conceive, that's a lot of very unhappy people right off the bat, even in their 20s. It has huge psychological impact on these couples, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's tremendously stressful, and it changes so many things often in the dynamic between a couple. It changes what gets talked about. Once you get into infertility treatment, you're told when to have sexual intercourse. It changes many, many things and creates enormous stress. And so if one can avoid that, that's great. Otherwise, what are your coping strategies? Do you have a practice that might include breath work? It might include meditation. It might include imagery. It might include a yoga practice or Tai Chi or walks in the desert. But what can you do to really find ways to not just be focused single-mindedly on, I'm trying to get pregnant, I'm disappointed because my period has come. What can you do?
And then for these couples that do find themselves in the position where there's an infertility issue, then you really, really get into some, it can be extremely costly, can't it?
Yes,
trying to have a child.
It is very, very expensive, and insurance covers to greater and lesser extents depending on the place you live, the plan you have, but often this is an extremely expensive challenge as well for couples.
We did not talk about reducing environmental toxins. That's probably a big thing, too. When you say environmental toxins, give us a few quick examples.
Well, they can show up in the foods because pesticides end up being in the grains, perhaps, that are fed to cattle. They can show up in the plastics. Plasticizers are endocrine disruptors, which can interfere with normal cycles. They can show up in pesticides spread around the house. Just yesterday, there was an an article in the Journal of Pediatrics that showed that mothers who were exposed to more pesticides, the kinds you use in your house to spray to get rid of bugs, had children with more learning disabilities and lower IQs. So again, with the goal being to get pregnant and also to have a healthy child, reducing the amount of environmental toxins you're exposed to, very important and more doable today. We have more and more resources that allow us to become aware and make safer choices.
Got about 1 minute to go. The fertility issue is something that you've been writing about, and then in your book, Integrative Women's Health, you cover a whole variety of topics. And I know, as I mentioned in that intro, you really do travel a lot around the world, actually, speaking on these issues. Women's issues, let's face it, there really is a whole set that are completely different
yes.
than the obvious stuff with the men. And getting back to our interview with Dr. Avey, was saying about the issues with women and heart disease. So, I mean, there are big, huge differences.
Absolutely. And there are some fascinating gender differences in the way diseases are expressed, the symptoms people present with. So it's not just things related to the ovaries, perhaps the uterus and the breast. Right. There are differences in heart disease.
Some obvious stuff, right? Dr. Victoria Mays, is always a pleasure. Dr. Mays is from the University of Arizona-based Center for Integrative Medicine. She is a monthly regular guest here on the Buckmaster Show on KJLL. We're live 9 to 10 a.m. and on BuckmasterShow.com. We'll be back with Big Jim Griffith.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at ferroamorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
The Buckmaster Show, brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger, the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. While the founder of the Southwest Folklore Center on the University of Arizona campus and co-founder of the annual Tucson Meet Yourself Folk Arts Festival is Dr. James Big Jim Griffith. He has studied folklore and religious expressions throughout the United States-Mexico border region for over four decades, and just this past week he was awarded the Lifelong Service Award from the Hispanic Professional Action Committee. Big Jim Griffith joins us now on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. Big Jim, a pleasure to talk with you again.
Boy, it's so nice to be here with you. You're looking good, Bill.
Well, it's been always a pleasure having you. Certainly, we enjoyed your Southern Arizona Tradition segments on Arizona Illustrated on PBS. I think you did those segments, Southern Arizona Traditions, for about 25 years. They were one of the highest rated segments on the TV show, and you did great work with that, and we'd love to have you do some more.
Well, the only thing I disagree with on you is your use of that word work. It was fun. Those things were just so great to do and so much fun to do, and of course I'd love to join you on the radio show.
Well, Big Jim, I'm going to throw you a curve here and make an executive decision. Since I own this radio show, I'm going to invite you to be a Buckmaster Show contributor on Folklore, and you will be a monthly guest on this program, and you will be doing We Will Resurrect Southern Arizona Traditions. Does that sound like a deal?
That sounds absolutely wonderful, especially if we can do it on changing dates, so it's not necessarily the third Thursday of every month, because sometimes I get a chance to go out of town and do something fun.
We will make it so it will be convenient for your schedule. How's that?
That's beautiful.
I understand you're working on converting some of those Southern Arizona Tradition segments into a book. What were some of the favorite segments that stand out?
Oh, boy.
I remember, quite honestly, some of the How Hot Is It segments.
Yeah. The sand trout segment was fun.
Oh, yeah, the sand trout in the Santa Cruz River.
Yes. And the food segments were always fun. Your cohort there was saying last night that she especially liked the tequila segment. And I assured her, as I have assured everyone since we shot that was water in those glasses.
Of course, Big Jim, that was just water, and you're referring to my producer, the lovely and talented Rosemary Brandt.
Yes.
Go ahead.
You can prove that it was water because that was shot at 9 in the morning, and we had to take about 6 takes on parts of it, and if it hadn't been water, it would have ended up very different than it did.
Big Jim, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Do you have a quick story for us?
A quick story. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. In about 1850, a group of very angry Papagos and Yaquis and other people were attacking the mission community of Okitoa in the Altar Valley. And according to the people still alive today in Okitoa who tell this story, the villagers were holed up in the church, and they had run out of ammunition, and the next charge was obviously going to be the last, because they had no way to defend themselves, and all of a sudden they saw the attackers running. And many months later, a man who had been with the attacking group came by the village, and they asked him, "Why did you run away when you had us?" And he said, "Oh, we ran away when we saw the relief column coming in from Altar." Well, there wasn't a relief column. They said, "What relief column?" "Well, you know, the one with the led by the bald-headed officer in the gray cloak." Well, St. Anthony, statue of St. Anthony over the altar shows him tonsured with a bald head and wearing gray, which Franciscans wore at the time. And this is accepted still in the village as the story of how St. Anthony came down from heaven or off the altar or something and created the illusion of an army to save his village and his people.
Big Jim, we've got to go. We will look forward to your monthly visits with us on the Buckmaster Show. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Big Jim.
Goodbye.
Lawmakers, they need to come up with a solid program to reduce the growing deficit. Deja vu in Dallas. Flights are being canceled today because of another snowstorm. Up to a foot fell in parts of Oklahoma, and the storm is heading for the southeast. You might owe more on your mortgage than your home is worth. A report from Zillow.com finds almost 30% of homes are underwater. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Total customer care. That's what makes Midas different. It's how we get to know you and your car, explain things in a way you'll understand, and give you service and repair options that respect your budget. From routine maintenance like oil changes, tires, and brakes, to advanced engine diagnostics and major system repair. Come to Midas and see the difference total customer care can make. People and prices you can trust. That's the Midas touch.
Want to lower the cost of doing business?
Keep your data safe and easily accessible.
Barracuda Networks can help. The Barracuda Backup Service is the only data storage solution that combines on-site hardware for rapid restores and cloud-based storage for disaster recovery. At just 50 cents per gigabyte per month and advanced deduplication technology to significantly reduce storage space requirements, the Barracuda Backup Service is the most affordable and efficient data storage solution for any size business. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM for your free evaluation unit. 888-ANTI-SPAM. Or visit Barracuda.com.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tanca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Coming up on 35 minutes past the hour, this is the Buckmaster Show on KJLL. When it comes to the housing market, well, what can you say? One word comes to mind, John Strobeck, and that word is ouch. I think that would be appropriate.
I think so, too.
John Strobeck is the owner of Bright Futures Business Consultants. Mr. Strobeck is the Tucson area's most well-known and respected housing consultant. He's out with his annual forecast for the housing industry. John, it's good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, Bill.
How does that how'd that annual forecast come out? I know you had a big group of people that got together. Where was it? What hotel did you all?
We were up at the La Paloma.
Yeah, and you had Marshall Vest there, and what was your bottom line on your housing industry forecast?
Well, we're probably going to have the slowest volume of housing construction that we've ever had, as far as I know, going back to the 1950s. We're going to do about 1,750 new construction homes in 2011, which if you contrast it to what happened in 2005 when we had 11,000 permits. Ooh. You know, we're doing literally one-tenth of what we did then.
So we're just really struggling.
We are struggling, and the problem is that we have a lot of loans that were not good loans that were issued, and these were loans like that were interest-only loans, and they came due at a certain time, and they were sold with the idea that home values would continue to improve all the time, and then you could refinance. Well, Bill, they didn't. The home values came down, and then what happened was you were sitting there with a mortgage that was higher than your value of your home. You had a $150,000 home and had a $200,000 mortgage, and your house payment went from interest only at $1,200 a month to $3,000 a month. So you said, hey, bye, I'm out of here, and that's what's happened.
And you find yourself then, as they say, underwater.
Absolutely, underwater. And, you know, you can't make the payments because they've tripled on you. So that's the case of what we've seen happen.
John Strobeck, at least half of homeowners with a mortgage owe more than their homes are worth in 17 of America's 386 counties. Well, unfortunately, a couple of those counties are right here in Arizona. Maricopa County up in Phoenix, it's 54.4% of the homeowners are underwater. Pinal County, just north of us here in Tucson, 52.6% underwater. We certainly are in a very, very bad situation as far as being underwater.
Yes, we're probably better off, though, if we want to see a positive thing. Actually, the Tucson area is probably around the high 30s into the low 40s as a percent of who's underwater right now, which
so
is much better.
So comparatively, that looks really good when you look at the Phoenix situation.
And you look at Clark County, Nevada, which is Las Vegas, and they're in the 70s. So there's some good news right there that we could be worse off.
Nationwide, John Strobeck, home prices are down 30% from their 2006 peak. According to the Moody's Group, their economist Cecilia Chen says the national home prices will regain ground by, get this, 2021? But some areas like Phoenix, Detroit, Las Vegas, Riverside, California, and Miami, it will take far longer. Perhaps 2030. You're talking generations here.
Oh, you are. You are. And we're down about 37% right here from 2006.
Go ahead, John.
That just is means the values have gone down. Home equity has dried up. And so, you know, people used home equity loans, for instance, Bill, to go out and get extra money that they needed. They can't do that anymore because no one has equity in their homes.
How has this affected our construction industry? I know it's been very bad. Are there some signs of life in new home construction?
No,
no.
Not right now.
Okay.
I mean, to be very honest with you, it's the only thing that is showing any bit of life is the fact that new construction homes have seen a price increase lately, and that is due to the fact that we used to do one out of every three homes was a new construction home. Now we're doing one out of every 8.5 homes are a new construction home. So the market share of new construction has gone down. But the people who want new homes are willing to pay for new homes. They want a certain home in a certain area in a certain locale, and they want it to have these features, and they're not willing to go out and buy a foreclosure home or a short sale. They want what they want, and they're willing to pay for it. So we have seen the prices go up because of that.
The median price and the average price, where are we at as far as that is concerned in Pima County?
Well, if we look at as a whole, everything, resales, foreclosures, and new construction, we're at about $160,000 for the median price, $160,000. If we look at just the new home price, we're a little over $200,000. If we look at just the foreclosure, we're at half of that, $100,000. And then, of course, the resale hits about $150,000. And so that's where we are in pricing. Now, think about that, because back in 2004, 2005, and 2006, you couldn't buy hardly any new home for less than $200,000. And we're talking median prices all in the 100s, with the exception of $200,000 for new construction right now.
So there are tremendous bargains out there.
Oh,
if you're looking for a foreclosed home, you could really clean up, couldn't you? If you're
looking for a home. You can. And you know, that's a good thing. If you can afford to get a home, or you can buy a home and you can get credit, now is the time to get it. Boy, I'll tell you, you're going to find bargains out there that we haven't seen since the 80s, 70s, I don't know when.
Tell us a little bit about Bright Futures, your business consulting group. How did you get into this business?
Well, I spent 30 years with IBM Corporation and ended up here in Tucson, actually not out at the plant, but after moving around 11 times with IBM, I ended up in Tucson, and I was here a year, and they said, how about Raleigh, North Carolina? And I said, oh, you know, I'm tired of moving. And they said, well, we have this nice buyout that you can take. And I was doing very well. So they offered me a whole lot of money and said, here, would you like this? And I said, yes, I would like that a lot. You know, so I was looking for something to do, and I ran into R.L. Brown, who does this very same thing up in Phoenix. And he said, you ought to do this. And I said, well, I don't have any expertise in that. And he says, you've moved 11 times. You bought and sold a house every time. You're an expert. So that's how I got into it, Bill.
How do you come up with your monthly reports, John?
We gather data from all sorts of sources, most of them from permit records at government entities. We collect from 6 different government entities. We also get all the affidavits of value from the county, and then we also solicit all the home builders as to what product they have available on the market. We assemble all of that information together monthly, and then we put out lots of reports, which you can find out on our website, www.orangereports.com. The reason we call it Orange Reports is they have orange covers, so everybody refers to them as the Orange Reports.
That makes sense. I noticed Marshall Vest was quoted today in the Arizona Daily Star as talking about the growth, the census figure showing we're actually losing people here in Southern Arizona. Doesn't take to connect the dots, putting too much together to figure out that's not going to help the home situation.
Absolutely not. And it's really, really, really hurting some of the apartment situations. If you go down, particularly on the south side of town, where you'll find that there are a lot of vacant apartments down in that area. And so we've seen both a out-migration of a whole lot of people for many different reasons, and that's not helping at all either.
How has it affected the building, not just the people that work for these large housing construction companies? How are they doing here in town? We've lost quite a few, haven't we, home builders?
Well, yes, we're down to, as a matter of fact, we usually do the top 25
right.
Every year, and this year we only had 29 that had a major volume of business, so we didn't even do the top 25. We said, hey, there you go, we'll just do the bunch.
Here's the list, yeah, here's the list, take your pick. So let's talk now about your forecast. How, in summary, for 2011 and beyond?
We're going to do about 1,750 permits in 2011. And this is because this year, 2011, has the largest number of resets of these loans of any year that we've had so far. Then we're going to start crawling out of this, I think, starting in 2012, 2013, 2014, where it's going to be that long before we even see much of a trend upward. We're seeing maybe through those years 100 to 150 more homes in that time, but that's about it.
But you think we may regain the ground a little bit ahead of the national level? I mentioned that figure, or that year 2021, that economist was saying. You think Tucson will lead the way, perhaps?
We're a little better off.
A little better off, maybe a couple of years earlier than that.
I think 2014 and 15, we'll start seeing normality, whatever that might be, coming back into the market.
Okay, John Strobeck, and folks can get more information again about John Strobeck and Bright Futures Business Consultants. Give us that website again, John.
www.orangereports.com.
Oh, that's an easy one, the Orange Reports. John Strobeck, thank you very much for being on the Buckmaster Show.
Good to be with her. Good with you, Bill.
Thank you so much. That was John Strobeck, the housing consultant guru of Southern Arizona, joining us on the Buckmaster Show. We're going to be talking arts and culture. Mark Sublett will be coming up with his special guest, a Western artist of renown, and we'll be talking with him.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Coming up on 49 minutes past the hour, next on the Buckmaster Show, we bring in another of our Buckmaster Show contributors. The entire long list of contributors is on our website at buckmastershow.com. Dr. Mark Sublett, who owns the Medicine Man Gallery in Tucson and Santa Fe, covers arts and culture for us, and we welcome Mark and his guest, Santa Fe-based contemporary Western painter Bill Shank, who is in Tucson for the opening on February the 12th. Of his art will be featured at the Tucson Museum of Art. And we are delighted to have Mr. Shank with us, aren't we, Mark?
We are. I've known Billy 21 years, he just informed me, and it just seems like it's been two, Bill.
And we should mention that Mr. Shank is also equally famous for his artwork and his collection of historic pottery and 20th century Western paintings.
Yeah, that's actually how I met Billy. I was selling him stuff periodically, and now he's really just, I think of you mainly as a very important American artist.
Well, thank you.
You can pay me later.
Yeah. Bill, tell us a little bit about the exhibition that opens at the Tucson Museum of Art February the 12th.
This is a retrospective of serigraphs that I've done from 1971 to 1996. And serigraphs is just a big fancy word for silkscreen prints.
And you created, 52 editions of the serigraphs?
Yeah, I think there's 54 different images in entirely, but there were sometimes first states, second states of the same image. And there's 44 of those here for the exhibition.
And this was a wide variety of themes.
Fictionalized
Western histories, Native American subjects, text and image works, and depictions of modern cowboys and cowgirls.
Yes, yeah. It's all that.
Tell us a bit, what is a serigraph?
Well, it's a silkscreen process, which traditionally is known as a commercial printing process, and it really wasn't considered a fine art medium until Andy Warhol began silkscreening around 1961-62. When I was in art school, and I was in two different art schools, it wasn't even taught as a printmaking medium at all. It's something that was suggested to me after I left art school and moved to New York. And by that time, I was familiar with Warhol's career, so it just seemed like a viable thing to do, considering the style of painting that I do, which is a flat, if you will, paint-by-number style. I mean, it's flat and closed areas, so that if I translated a painted image to a serigraph, actually nothing was lost in the process at all. My work just translated perfectly to serigraphs.
And Warhol was really an influence for you, right? I mean, I think that's one of the most fascinating things about your career. Something I think the listeners would really enjoy is, you know, you were inspired, right?
Yeah, I
worked
was.
For him too, right?
Yeah, I was in art school in 1966 and left briefly, went to New York, and totally by accident ran into a friend of mine who, and I was, you know, lamenting I was here broke in New York, you know, in a cafe in the West Village, and what should I do? He says, I can get you some work. I said, what, are you kidding? He says, no, I know Warhol. They're over there at the at St. Mark's Place with the Velvet Underground. He's producing the Velvet Underground. I'm sure, you know, they need help with the light crew. And so I went over there. Boom, I was hired like in 10 minutes, I mean 10 seconds. And then later that evening, I met Warhol and helped with the Velvet Underground, you know, hauling equipment in and out of the Dom for the time that I was there. After I was finished with art school, I came back to New York, my first solo show. I was really young, and Andy showed up for my opening. I was knocked out that he would do such a thing. I just thought that was terrific.
And your first painting that you saw in a museum, wasn't it a Warhol, too?
That's true. Actually, I was telling Mark the other day, when I was a kid growing up, I traveled with my brother and my mother around the country, and we went to every natural history museum there was in every large city. As we were out in the western states, we looked at county museums and this and that. We never once stepped foot in an art museum. So when I was a freshman in art school, the first show that I had the privilege of seeing was Andy Warhol, and it was the Campbell Soup Can group of, I think there were 50 or 52 paintings. And having a totally young, impressionable mind, I didn't have any foregone conclusions about what good art or bad art was. I had no opinions at all. So I saw these soup can silkscreen images of it. Oh, this is fine art. This is what art is. Okay.
We're talking with artist Bill Shank on the Buckmaster Show, and I'm joined by Mark Sublett, who is the Buckmaster Show Arts and Culture Contributor. Tell us a little bit about, certainly Warhol being one of your influences. You're a huge collector, as
true.
I mentioned in the intro. What kind of art do you like to collect?
Well, that's been an evolutionary process. Originally, I collected other contemporary photorealist friends of mine in New York, and some abstract work. And by the early 80s, I had moved to collecting historic Western paintings. And by then, I was actually looking at them as a direct influence on how I could do certain types of imagery of my own. So I thought, well, if I own these things, I can put them right in the studio with me on the wall right next to where I'm painting. If there's a certain passage that I'm not comfortable with in my own painting, well, so-and-so did that, and they did that really well. I'll imitate that. So it just proceeded to, I just started collecting more and more of them.
And it's turned into a huge collection, hasn't it, Mark?
Well, yeah. Bill, I've always said about Billy that really it's his eye. They know him as Billy Famous in the art world. This is a true, but it's really Billy the Eye as far as I'm concerned, because he can always pick out that great painting. And Bill and I have a shared common interest in Maynard Dixon. Which
I was going to wonder if that was one of your favorites, Maynard Dixon.
Absolutely. He's... I didn't really know about him early in my collecting, but it wasn't too long after that I gravitated to Maynard Dixon. And, of course, this was almost simultaneous to the time that I met Mark. So there was lots of things to look at that Mark was getting and buying and selling. And then also the books began to come out. And I think you had probably some influence in that direction, too.
What resonates with you from when you see a Dixon piece?
Well... there's the reductive quality. I mean, here's all this visual information, and to reduce, and to make cloudscapes, for instance, as volumetric or as architectonic as they are. The same with the groundscapes, landscapes. It just spoke to me in volumes because I, too, was doing a reductive approach to the same imagery. I was doing it with projected slides. But this was a way for me to see how someone else could translate a lot of information and make it powerful by its simplicity.
And I think that's it. I mean, when I look at your paintings, I get this kind of it's a cross between a pop realist Andy Warhol and Maynard Dixon, really. Yeah. I mean, I see that. It appeals to me a great deal because I do like both. Mm-hmm. I like, obviously, Dixon, but I like Andy Warhol. And somehow you've seemed to have gapped that in a very unique way. And I will say that I've heard museum curators say that, here's an original voice. This Bill Shank is an original voice doing the pop, Western in a time frame of 1970. And you were telling me earlier you actually had done many solo shows in Europe, correct?
Yeah, I did, early in my career. I had two solo shows in Brussels by the time I was 25 and 26. I was showing in Paris, Milan, Zurich, London. I was in museum group shows with the cutting-edge contemporary artists that were all, art history names to me. These were people I studied when I was in art school, and now I'm in a museum show with them? This was outrageous. It was wonderful.
I think Tucson art lovers and Southern Arizona art lovers are in for a real treat when that exhibition opens up at the Tucson Museum of Art. Bill Shank's serigraphs will be on display. I think that goes into May at the Tucson Museum of Art.
Actually, to June 28th.
Oh, June 28th.
Yeah, so they did extend it.
Plenty of opportunity.
And we're also lucky enough to have Bill's original oils over at the Medicine Man Gallery. He's brought some over, so you can see them in there as well.
Remaining minute or so, Bill, quickly, your work ethic. Do you try to work a little bit every day when you're Santa Fe at your gallery? Is your studio in your home?
Not in my home. We have a compound, and my painting studio is literally 100 feet past the kitchen door.
Ooh, that's
so
nice.
So we go from coffee to the studio.
to go to work, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and I like to go to work early because, as the day gets on, sometimes there's a lot of chaos. So if I can jump in the studio by 7:30, 8 o'clock, I might get, a three-hour stretch that's not interrupted at all. And then if I can, jump back in again for 2 or 3 hours in the afternoon. But generally, yes, I like to work 7 days a week.
And you're working in, what are you working on right now? What project?
I've actually got a small series of crosses in New Mexico landscape.
Ooh.
The first one was a small painting, and it surprised me. I really liked it. I thought, wow, how'd this happen? And So then I sort of...
We will look for those.
Yes. Okay.
Lacrosse. Bill Shank, thank you very much for being with us, and we look forward to the exhibition at the Tucson Museum of Art, February the 12th. Mark Sublett of Medicine Man Gallery, a great opportunity to see some of Bill Shank's work at your gallery as well. Thank you, Mark. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster, buckmastershow.com. Have a great day.
KJLL.
Hello, you're on the air.
South Tucson.